Hey, everybody. Welcome to the ANN After Show. It's me, Lindsay Loveridge, ANN executive editor slash potential Prospera cosplayer. Can you see it? I can kind of see it. Can you see it? How about now?
Just got to get the mask. There it is.
I just got to get the mask. Here I am.
How dare you do that to somebody? Oh, I'm sorry.
I got confused. Yeah. And with me today is James Beckett, ANN reviewer, and one of my favorite people, to be absolutely honest. Jackie's not here this week. We're going to be moving the podcast back to Mondays, not next week, but the week after, to accommodate. She's doing some cool things, and Tuesdays just aren't working. So we're going to be moving to Mondays starting next season. Also, to get everyone up to date, if you were watching last week, I said that we were going to have the trailer watch party on the 19th. I lied. I have a meeting on the 19th that I have to be at, and it's at the exact same time. So we are going to be having trailer watch party. Me, James, Jeff Thew from Mother's Basement, and Jackie Jing will all be here at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern on Wednesday, June 21st. That is the day for realsies, for all the summer trailers. We're going to watch all of them. I'm already kind of scared because I looked over the series list and it kind of sucks.
Oh, no.
I'm sorry,
everybody. Do we have as many as the last couple?
Oh, I didn't do it. I haven't done a count.
Okay.
I have not done a count yet. I just
the list kind of sucks, but it's only like 30 instead of 50.
That would be nice. I don't know that that's true. We've got like a couple of second seasons of stuff that's coming back that looks halfway decent. I mean, if you like Bleach, Bleach is coming back. Sugar Apple Fairy Tales coming back for people who watched that and really enjoyed it.
JJK's... Is that fall or is that?
I think I'm pretty sure JJK is fall. So, we're not getting that. Otherwise, I'd be hyping that up. I'm actually scrolling through. Horimiya is coming back, which.
Oh, yeah. The weird, like, psych. We just like adapt everything.
Yeah. It's like some side chapters, I think. It's called Horimiya, The Missing Pieces. Mushoku Tensei is coming back because, you know, that's for somebody. But other than those, My Happy Marriage is one that I think actually is supposed to look pretty good. And, oh, you know what? I'm lying. Jujutsu Kaisen is coming back.
Yes!
Jujutsu Kaisen is coming back. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to send a note to a couple people who are making graphics for a trailer watch party to let them know that Jujutsu Kaisen is coming back. The new Rurouni Kenshin adaptation is premiering, which... Yeah, there's just,
I wish I could be excited about that.
I know, the ups and downs. I don't know if Nicholas Dupree is here, but he'll be happy to know the third season of Rent-A-Girlfriend is coming back. Whee! Yeah, and Bungo Stray Dogs. That's coming back. I need to catch up on that one.
I need to watch that show. I feel like, mm-hmm. I mean, it's like four seasons in, but it just sounds like the kind of show that'd be right up my alley. My wife's alley. That might be the kind of show that we could watch.
Yeah, you guys could watch it together for real. I watched the first two seasons in the movie, but I didn't finish 3 and 4. Theo in the chat asked, has Pluto's release been announced yet? That's a Netflix show. That's a very good question, because if Pluto is coming out soon, we should all be hyped for that, especially James, because you just finished Monster.
I did. God, that show was long. It was good.
It was good.
It was so long.
Yeah. I don't think we have a release date for Pluto other than the fact that it is coming out this year. We might get an announcement on that at Anime Expo, because I know that Netflix has a panel at Anime Expo, and Masao Maruyama is going to be there for that. So fingers crossed we find out more definitive information about Pluto. But yeah, otherwise, I may have misjudged the list. There are some good things in here that I was not aware of that I am tentatively...
Might be kind of like that season, what was it, 3 seasons ago? Like the one right after, right after the Chainsaw Man season? Where like,
yeah,
we had one season that was nothing but hits, and then after that it was mostly just like rom-coms and isekai.
Yeah, it was really dry, kind of dry for us. Spy Classroom's coming back, James.
Oh, well, okay.
So that gets voted in.
For a second, you said that, and I was like, oh, Spy Family. And then my brain had to remember that Spy Classroom exists. Well, I mean, it kind of sort of started getting good, like, right at the end there. So maybe it'll...
Hey, yeah, maybe it'll pick up. Yeah. For those just listening to the audio version of this, I'm drinking a frozen lemonade and it's very tasty, but you may get some drink ASMR in there. I usually don't like bring things with me onto this because I'm like loud. So Devil Part-Timer season 3 also.
I feel like that did not hit the way that it would have, 8 years ago, 7 years ago, however long.
It just didn't quite, it missed its window, you know? Just sort of missed its window on that one.
They still need to make an Origami season 3, though. That show will never miss its window, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
That's one of those mid-2010 shows that needs to come back, even if it's another decade. But
Theo also wants to know if Nier Automata will ever come back.
That's a wonderful question. I'm technically reviewing it this season. So,
technically reviewing it in perpetuity until it finally comes back.
I'm assuming it's going to start over at this point.
Like, yeah. It's funny.
2.5 months. So
we just said, we'll find out more about Pluto at AX and Osamu Aoyama will be there. Yoko Taro is also going to be at AX. So, if I see him, I'll ask him about his anime adaptation.
I mean, he's famously great at giving straight answers. So I think that'll be a very easy sit down.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think he wears the headpiece on the airplane? Or does he check it in his luggage?
Oh, I'm sure he doesn't wear it on the airplane.
Are you sure?
Yeah. Well, because, the whole benefit of the headpiece is when he's not in front of an audience who knows his name, no one knows who he is. So he has to be some guy.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. He could ride an airplane. No one would know. Golden Kamuy is continuing in the summer season, right? Yeah, Golden Kamuy came back season 4. That got delayed last season after an unfortunate passing of a staff member. They never did reveal who that was or what their role was. But we're into new episodes again now. So I'm not sure how many episodes it's supposed to run for, though. Episode 4. So
is the manga? The manga's still going, right? That's one of those ones.
Golden Kamuy ended? My brain file is saying that the manga ended a while back.
Okay.
But let me make sure I'm not full of shit. It won some awards last year. Yes, it ended in 3 chapters. It ended last year. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So, awesome.
So yeah, it's wrapped. So the anime can adapt it completely, the whole story. Excellent. There shouldn't be any issues with that. So I didn't really pull out any news for us to discuss before we got into the 2 crazy episodes of anime.
So much happened this week.
So much happened this week. So I think we'll just dive into that. I mean, I could go on and on about Anime Expo. I'll be in the middle of planning our coverage for that until I'm in Los Angeles. So just, keep an eye out on Anime News Network. We're going to have a ton of coverage of that event. They're still announcing panels, even though the schedule came out last week. So, like, Crunchyroll just announced a bunch of their panels today that were not included in the original schedule, which is great for people like me who are trying to coordinate what, like, 6 different people are doing for the next 4 days. So
it keeps it interesting.
Yeah. Just when I think I have my spreadsheet all filled out and get a press release that's like, hey, here's 8 other things from one of the major streaming services of the genre of entertainment that you watch. What's medium of entertainment?
The major one at this point, outside of, we got High Dive and Retro Crush. I mean, they don't have they don't really have currently airing stuff. But if you guys have been sleeping on Retro Crush, don't be, because they got some good stuff on there.
Yeah. Also, speaking of, this is a Retro Crush specifically, but we had a review that went up earlier this week for Gunbuster. Since that's on Blu-ray now, you can get it. You can physically have Gunbuster. Caitlin Moore wrote a great review about the anime's significance, as well as just what a good watch it still is. It's a 6-episode OAV and seminal, really, as far as how much stuff it has affected beyond that point. Early stuff from Hideaki Anno, so go check that out if you haven't yet. All right, James, should we flip a coin? Are we doing Heavenly Delusion or Gundam first?
Oh, gosh. I feel like even though I got way more screenshots for Gundam, I think it'll actually go a lot quicker. because a lot of the episode is basically kind of making sure everyone knows what's going on.
Yeah, 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 that's true. I appreciated that.
As yes, someone, I did too.
Yeah, I was like, thanks for we finally got the answer that Space Assembly League is kind of, as I expected, the UN of space. Whether they're actually fulfilling that role well or not is another question.
But they seem to be way more influential than the, yeah, than the actual UN as far as their ability to what's the word? Mobilize forces.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, they were kind of working for doing some secret-y, shady stuff in the background there. But I think, let me get our first screenshot up here, and we can kind of go over the events. I mean, there were a lot of important confrontations or clearing of the air, like between Mika and Martin after he, you know, turned her into the space cops. Soleta,
a significant percentage of these screenshots are probably going to be Mia Rene looking horribly traumatized.
She was just really, like, face in hands for like, yeah, the entire episode. And she's like, death. Yeah. Just feel a little bad for her, but definitely didn't have any idea what she was getting into, what she was signing up for. And now she's president of the Benaret group, right? Like, that kind of went by in the background a little bit.
I didn't realize it my first watch, honestly. I somehow, yeah, missed that. It was, yeah, going back through again in the screenshots. So I was like, oh crap, she's the president now.
Yeah. Ugh. Yeah. Yeah, so she kind of got thrust into that role, even though she was on the ground during a giant, like, civil confrontation. Like, I was going to say civil war at first, but that's not really what it is. It's, you know, Spacians versus Earthians attack, and a whole bunch of civilians were killed, and she still ended up getting put into the role. And I feel like I came out of this episode thinking that Prospera expected that. Like, her, the game Prospera is playing right now is like the long game.
Oh yeah,
right. She's 40, like, definitely. She's like, chess wise, she's like 30 steps ahead, yeah, of everybody. Like, she knew that Mirene would end up at the end of this as president, and that she would be forced to contend with what's all going on here.
Well, it turns out, as Gundam has often made central to its themes, when the movers and shakers of your geopolitical landscape, mm-hmm, are literal children, it's pretty easy to get them to do what you want.
Yeah. Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. LFR mentioned in the chat that the Caliban is another Tempest reference. James, like, my Shakespeare knowledge is limited to not the Tempest. I don't know that much about the Tempest. You teach English, so can you fill in there about, like...
Yeah, so so in the show, the new Gundam that they kind of pulled out of nowhere, but it's fine because it's probably going to be sick, is they're calling it the Calibarn.
Okay.
And I guess a lot of people are thinking that that is a portmanteau of Caliban and Caliburn, which is like another name for Excalibur from the Arthurian legends. But point being, Caliban is the horrifically abused and mistreated slave that Prospero in the Tempest keeps on the island and has get up to mischief. And there's a whole lot of conflict between them and conniving for, you know, Caliban to get out from under Prospero's thumb. Ariel and Caliban are both basically slaves.
Ariel's a magical being, though, right? Like,
Ariel's a fairy. Yeah.
Yeah, I knew that.
Not a fairy, but like a wind elemental
spirit. Yeah, like a nymph sort of. So, and in Gundam Wing for Mercury, like, they dropped that name a couple times. It's in this series, that's the name for this other Gundam unit.
Yeah, they're calling it the Monster, I guess, is its nickname.
Okay. I just want to make sure I was following on that. That's what they were referring to, and they did that. We also found out Petra's not dead, which is cool. But Lauda,
she's not doing great.
She's seen better days, but, you know, it looks like she may have lost an eye. Like, she's got an eye patch and everything. But I am worried about Lauda.
Oh yeah, Lauda's definitely gonna go on like some kind of suicide run or some sort of heel turn where he's gonna try to kill Miorine and then
Why do you think he blames Miorine for everything though? Like, I was trying to kind of connect his logic there. I mean, it can't be perfectly logical because he's obviously in a like highly emotional state about his brother and what he learned about his brother and his dad. And
I mean, I guess if you're looking at the chain of events that led Ghoul to be sort of kicked off his pedestal and sent to live in the woods as a forest bum, and then he
I forgot that he was living in a tent.
Yeah.
And then his journey has been a lot, you know?
It truly has. He's honestly had probably the wildest character arc of this entire show. Mm-hmm. As far as just where he started versus where he's at. But I guess if you're looking at all the stuff that kind of got Ghoul in a position to accidentally murder his own father and then get wrapped up in this, you know, all of this stuff with Miorine right now, I think he's basically just looking at her as like the fulcrum for all of that.
Okay. Yeah, because it's not like she, I mean, you could argue that, you know, she is inadvertently responsible for the conflict that ended up going down on Earth, because her political maneuvering, which was, you know, pushed by Prospera quite a bit, gave Prospera the in to then manufacture that conflict.
Yes.
So,
and she, I mean, she knowingly, it's not like she's like unaware that Prospera is a conniving madwoman, right? Like she knows that Prospera is bad news.
Right. Because she saw what she had done to her daughter. That's like, that's what led to that confrontation in the first place. Yeah. And then Prospera was like, I need you to go with me to ditch Suleta, and I need you to become president. But the only reason she wants her to become president is because she can manipulate her. And so that the sequence of events that she wants to take place, like, continue. Right. Mm-hmm. I liked Miorine and Shadik's prison interview here. Mm-hmm. I liked this. This is like, visually, they've dressed him down in a way that makes him seem like vulnerable, but also kind of freeing because he's lost everything. This definitely looks like a guy who like has lost everything, but in a way is a little more free because of it. Mm-hmm. Like,
I don't know if it's like the prison cell white clothes vibe, but it gave me kind of Magneto and Professor X vibes.
Yeah,
where like you have these people where, you know, Miorine is like the first to admit, she's like, I don't hate you. I don't think that you're evil.
Yeah.
Like, I think that what you did was messed up, but I get why you did it. And
which is,
you
know, big, because that's how her father was injured.
Yeah.
Was in that attack by Donna Fold that he completely put together. I mean, he wanted her dad to die, I think, in that sequence so that his dad would then move into it and then he could kidnap his dad and take over in the first place as well.
I think it was so interesting is that it seems to me that Miorine has more or less just come to terms with the fact that her dad's kind of a terrible person.
Yeah.
And so, like, I think, like, I think she's, like, mad that he tried to kill her dad, but I think that because she is one of the more reasonable people in the show, she, like, understands why.
Yeah.
She's like, yeah, I'd probably want to kill my dad if I were you, to be honest. So,
yeah. Yeah, and I did like the sort of meeting halfway they came to where Shadik's like, well, you have to do something or there's going to be more people like me. Like, if you do anything, you have to make it so the Earthians don't continue to be radicalized in this way because you aren't treating them like shit anymore. Like, so I liked that in general. I get a vibe both by like how much he got mad at Ghoul in the previous episodes and this interaction that they have like some kind of like unspoken history, him and Miorine, that like we just don't know the full extent of.
Well, I mean, he was just straight up like way back in season one when they were at that party.
Yeah.
And where Miorine like established the new Gundam company. Mm-hmm. If I'm remembering right, I mean, he just straight up proposed to her basically.
Yeah.
He was like, hey, I like you. Like, we obviously have some chemistry. if we got married, we could, you know, pull a lot of strings together.
Yeah.
And so at the
power very couple, least, we could be a power yeah. couple. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so at the very least, there's, I mean, and then there was the, when he was fighting Ghoul last week and he was screaming about how Ghoul corrupted Mirene.
Yeah.
Well, that was him, right? Or was it?
Yeah. Ghoul? Yeah. It was him. Yeah. He was, yeah. And I think the motive behind that was like Ghoul wasn't strong enough to protect her. And now, like, her name's being dragged through the mud, and like, he just that Ghoul wasn't smart enough to outwit Prospera. Mm-hmm. And so now Mirene's hurt, her standing is hurt. She's thrust into the forefront of this conflict, or could be made out to be like a scapegoat for it in some way. All these other sorts of things that he wouldn't have allowed to happen if it had been him. At least that's yeah. what he thinks, right? So,
yeah.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, her actual fiance is just handing out tomatoes.
handing out tomatoes, you know, you never know. Here you go, you have a bad day. Have a tomato. The fact that they legit just like ate the tomatoes and then were like, it's really good. No,
I get, I love tomatoes, honestly. I eat tomatoes yeah. all the time.
Okay, James, you're
weird. I don't just bite into them, I usually slice them, but
well, okay, yeah, I mean. No. You have, you know, like some class there. We're not just because I mean, if you every tomato I've dealt with, if you were to just bite into it like that, you're just like it's just getting all over your hands. And like, if you don't slice it first, like usually it's not there's not any give in a tomato yeah, where you true. Could just it's bite it without it leaking everywhere, you know.
Maybe they're like that perfect level of ripeness where they're soft enough to where you can do that, but they're not like gross,
yeah. I mean, these ones look a little squishier than Although most tomatoes.
When she, you watch The Simpsons, right?
I mean, not regularly.
But back in the day.
Sure, I've seen some back in the day episodes. Yeah.
So when she bit into the tomato, all I could think of just because of the texture of it yeah. was the episode of The Simpsons where Homer accidentally invents tobacco.
Oh, okay.
The tomato with tobacco
yeah,
in it.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah,
they're like
yeah.
biting into it and it's all like brown and
yeah,
it's like tobacco chew. And yeah. it's, the art wasn't bad, but I think maybe that's the last time I've seen someone just bite into a tomato
yeah.
in like a cartoon or something. But all I could think of was Mirena just handing out tobacco to people to give them something to distract themselves from all their war trauma.
It was like, we're going to get more of those tomatoes. Yeah. Okay.
Speaking of last week, you were speaking of distracting people from their trauma. Last week, you were asking about the girl that Choo Choo punched.
Yeah, we weren't sure she was alive.
They are alive.
And yeah. Yeah. Tomatoes now. So. Yeah. Choo Choo's putting it all behind her. I mean, she's growing. Her hair is growing. I'm still convinced. Like the poof balls are getting larger every episode. Like there was at least one shot.
As her heart grows, her poof balls also grow.
Yeah, so. It's like a Grinch situation sort of thing there. This was the thought that wasn't coming to me when we were talking about Prospera's machinations, because Peel tech company jumped ship. They're like, well, we don't want to yeah. be associated. So this is how Prospera's is orchestrating Mia Rene and in turn her father's and in turn the Benaric group's sort of downfall. Is that now that she's orchestrated this fake, well, I mean, it feels real to everyone on the ground, but, you know, made this conflict happen on Earth, it gives the other companies an excuse to distance themselves from the Benaric group and Mirene in general, because she was on the ground at the time, and now things are splintering. So that's, I feel like that was on purpose. That was definitely like an intentional move on her part.
It's still a little unclear exactly how Quiet Zero works, and this is skipping ahead a bit, but I think yeah. she needed all of those mobile suits
right
to create that Quiet Zero web thing. So I think mm-hmm. she was fully anticipating getting the entire blockade coming her direction. I think that's what she wanted.
Oh yeah, yeah, because she again was then able to take out the Assembly League, who I think we learned last week or the week before, like they had been working with Shadeek's branch.
Yes.
They were working with Shadeek's branch, but also manufacturing the Gundams in secret, right?
Which... And this is the same group that that one lady and Elon are associated with, right?
Peel is who Elon is associated with, yeah. Okay. And Belle, the woman who does nothing but cry in front of children to make them feel sorry for her horrible, horrible war crimes. I appreciated Chuchu telling her that she's, I think it was Chuchu who told her she was selfish. Mika, I think, told her that she was too selfish because she just starts apologizing and crying and crying. And it's like the third
we need a favor, Suleta. We need you to do a really dangerous thing.
We need you to get inside a Gundam that has no protections against Data Storm and go fight your mom.
Yeah. I love the one guy who was like, is there anything that doesn't run on permit power?
Yeah, yeah, that too.
That was very much like acknowledging sort of the kind of space magic-y nature of it, where it's like, does permit power literally just power everything? And they're like, yes.
Well, I mean, I started thinking, when they said that, I thought of like, well, it's not that different from Bluetooth, other than the fact that like people are injected with it. So it's like, imagine if we were all Bluetooth capable.
Small detail.
But all I'm saying is the technology exists, okay? It's not that weird. If you think, it exists. If you think about how much everything has Bluetooth capabilities now, like just like in your house, and then imagine if someone could hijack it and then also kill people with it. But I mean,
so what you're saying is when Apple comes out with those new VR goggles, there's going to be kids that just like overheat and explode from using it.
Sure. I mean, isn't Elon Musk like currently testing brain chips in monkeys?
Oh, God help us all.
Right. Yeah. Technology exists and it's terrifying. So, yeah, it seems like everything is running with some of that capability, and Prosper's just got like a backdoor into all of it to manipulate it and disable it or do whatever it is that she feels is necessary at any given time. We also, did you get the sense that Suleta always knew everything about her like creation?
Because No, I don't think so. I think all of this stuff is stuff that she was like coming to terms with, and she was having her nighttime hams.
Okay.
You know, that's like, I think that's what she's been kind of stewing about.
Yeah.
Because like she didn't know like at all like who Eric was until she had that info dump with Ariel a couple episodes back, right?
Okay.
There was the one line that did make me wonder. She says, I'm guessing what you call a replic child.
Yeah, I was like, what is that? Where'd that term? That seems like a...
Was like, is everyone cloning kids? Is that like a normal thing that people do? They have like a term for it?
Yeah.
Like when you clone your dead pet? Like, is it like, oh yeah, this is my son. This is my replic son, just in case.
That's what threw me off too, is like she was kind of talking about all of it in such matter-of-fact way. Including like details we hadn't really heard her specifically like verbalize. So that's
why I guess she does have the internet. Maybe she was just like Googling stuff. Like,
I mean, that's true. Yeah, maybe she like found out.
Can you clone your kid?
How to clone child? And yeah, so yeah, repli child's a whore. That sounds like something from like some sort of like B movie, like. Sci-fi horror, Repli Child, and it's just, yeah. So that was something I was a little bit off about.
It's a good thing we don't have any horrifying childbirth-related material to cover later on
tonight. Oh God, I don't even want to. We'll be getting to the birthing in Heavenly Delusion here in a minute. I just wanted to shout out the Utena reference here. Way to take the coffin from Utena and put it into space. This is amazing. I think this thing is cool looking in like a terrifying way. It's sick. This is just like,
I want to make a model of that. I don't even know like what I would do with it, but I want a model.
Right. It kind of, and then it like changes color when the Data Storm part is activated, and then all the Gundams come out in something that also reminded me a little bit of End of Evangelion, when like all the unit. What are they called?
The
white ones with the wings came out and they like surrounded and like, it kind of reminded me of that too.
The mass production units.
Mass production units, that's right. Remind me of that a little bit. But yeah, I like the giant evil space coffin base where Prospera and her team of technicians, like there's a bunch of people on computers in there, just like...
Well, like they were working on Quiet Zero all the way back in the prologue, right? Like it wasn't initially meant to be a weapon of... whatever the hell it's doing.
Yeah.
But what was it meant for before? Like, what did they explain what they were doing with it
I think it was supposed to be kind of like Bluetooth, and it was the idea that you could send your Gundams out and they wouldn't have to be piloted, so that you could have pilotless
It just always looked units. Evil, man, I guess. Okay.
Well, I mean, you got an aesthetic, you just kind of got to stick to it, right?
This is branding. I mean, this is the woman who decided to name herself Prospera. Mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm. And I don't know if Shakespeare exists in this version of reality.
Right.
I'm assuming so. But even if not, like the fact that she had an evil alter ego ready to go.
Yeah.
When she enacted her master plan. Yeah, that makes sense.
I mean, do we not all have one of those?
No, I do. I mean,
okay.
But you know, she actually she went there. She got the mask and everything. So.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little jealous at her like dedication to the bit, to be honest. But yeah, so what we learned, I guess, is that the mobile suit that Soleta is going to pilot to stop her mom, it doesn't have any protections with the permit and the data source. So it's like fully manual is kind of what I'm assuming it is.
And my understanding too is that not only does it not have protections that the other Gundams where people have already exploded in have, but the only thing that's protecting Soleta from the data storm in the first place was Airy and the gun bits.
Oh, okay. Right. And that won't be there.
So I feel like it's like twice as bad as it normally would be for if she was just given a regular Gundam with like the usual safeguards.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's not good.
She got to reunite with Mia Rinne still too, right? Like
that she better.
It doesn't. I mean, they got her right. Like.
Well, I have to because she doesn't. I mean, she knows what's going on. I think with Mia Rinne.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure the news broadcasts have.
Yeah.
Have.
Yeah.
But I feel like that. I don't know. I feel like that once, because her approach to her mother has been very resigned, where she's like, yeah, we're not going to be able to talk my mom out of this. So I guess I guess it's the only thing to do.
Yeah.
But we haven't seen any like indignation or anger or anything from Soleta, which is fine. She doesn't need to have that. But I feel like when she sees how completely shattered Mia Rinne is by all of this, I don't know, I feel like that might add a little bit of fuel to the fire as far as her.
I'm assuming like before we get to the end game, Soleta's gonna protect Mia Rinne from Lauda, and so that's gonna be how they end up reunited in some way. Theo brings up that Quiet Zero is activated. Does that mean Airy could be in all Gundams now? I don't know. I feel like at least from what we've seen so far, there does seem to be kind of a range on it. Like they're not simultaneously hacking into like all permit things throughout space and Earth, right? Yeah, there's just this bubble. There's nothing saying that like it's immobile though. Like they could move it to, you know, because they were talking about the Earth sphere, right? Mm-hmm. Like that.
Well, they had to get it there somehow too, right? I'm assuming it has some like jet boosters on it.
Yeah, yeah. So it's currently in just that zone, but I suspect that it will be on the move, and that might, and I assume that it's heading towards. They're planning to bring it to Earth, right? So I don't know. There's still kind of some what ifs on the actual trajectory of how all this will go. But I do think Soleta and Irene will be reunited because of Lauda.
I hope we don't. I just hope we don't have to wait until the very last episode of the season.
Yeah, or they're gonna have Ghoul kill Lauda because he's there, right?
So someone is gonna kill Lauda. Lauda's dead.
Yeah.
You don't end an episode staring in vengeful hatred and declaring war against one of the two main characters of the show in a Gundam series without either dying horribly or getting like amnesia or, you know, something's going to happen.
I can't see this ending well for Ghoul because, I mean, if his brother dies, he has no living family left if his brother dies, right?
Nope.
And if he has to fight his brother, that sucks too because he had to, he killed his dad already. So I don't know. I don't know. Maybe Petra will come out of her medical state coma or whatever, and they'll like page her in to his mobile suit, and then he'll realize she's not dead. She'll talk him down or something. Maybe.
That would be a happier ending.
Yeah. I mean, why would they bother to tell us that, you know, she's not dead and is in the hospital? That's not going to...
I'm just saying the last time that someone directly threatened Miyarina's safety, they got turned into pasta sauce. So I'm pretty sure that if Suleta is in a Gundam that is colloquial known as the Monster,
mm-hmm.
and she sees that there's some jabroni out there trying to smack Miyarina around with his giant robot hands... I don't think she's going to hesitate to lay the smack down on him.
Yeah. Yeah. Not looking good for Lauda. I thought Shadeek would be killed, but I think he's just going to be living it up in prison.
I said this on Twitter the other day, but I really want to see post-prison Nika fan.
Yeah.
I want to see her all like buffed out with like her prison tats.
Yeah, she's turning herself in. She's gonna get tats. Yeah, I wonder if they'll go easy on her, like if she ends up helping somehow with this upcoming operation, if the Space Assembly will cut her some slack. I mean, real law enforcement does that, you know, you cooperate. All right, guys. We gotta talk about the body horror of Heavenly Delusion, because that's what this was. We have teenage childbirth and getting stabbed with a lot of medical instruments, which was both, I have thoughts about that and like how it ties back to what we know happens to her.
What's this about? Turns into a freaky man-eater thing in her vision.
Yeah. Yep. Just all of Mimihime's scary visions in this episode. And
was that the man-eater that ate the male body of
I'm not sure. I was thinking that myself as well, but I don't think it was as colorful, but also there had been enough time to go by. Maybe he was like kind of famished looking and it was him.
Yeah.
I don't know. Theo says it's not. So yeah, we got a lot of creepy visions, again, a lot of body horror, but one of the biggest things is that I feel like we kind of got more information about the purpose of this academy and like what they're what they're trying to do. And I was like, they're pulling a Nope. Like we're just straight up doing brain transplants. We're raising superpowered kids so we can put this old lady's brain into somebody else. Like, so
oh, you mean Get Out?
Oh, you're right. It's Get Out, not Nope. I'll have to fix the YouTube description on this because I said it was Nope. Jordan Peele movie, nonetheless.
Yeah.
So I think they're trying to achieve immortality, right?
Well, so there's two things.
Okay.
There's the brain transplant thing.
Yeah.
But also there is, and I don't know if they've mentioned this before, but they're basically developing these kids to be soldiers, right? To be combatants. They use the, I think they use the term like soldier, right? Like the soldiers won't be ready or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Or like I was under the impression that maybe like a part of it was... So one of the things is we got confirmation that, or at least very heavy implications, that the heaven stuff, while being in the past relative to the outside of the wall stuff, is still in some way, shape, or form kind of post-apocalyptic, because there's that whole bit where the director is like, who's going to get mad at me for forcibly transplanting my brain into my assistant's body?
Right.
Government? There's no government anymore. I was like, oh, there's not?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, she. I didn't quite pick up on that as far as the government part, but she did make it sound like this is, you know, this is a closed society type situation. And then she kind of mocked the idea that she mocked the idea that there was a god too. She's like even they, and I'm pretty sure the image that they kept showing, the gold one, was the sibling pair from Japanese mythology, whose names are escaping me right now. It's like Izanaga and
The moon goddess. Oh my goodness. Someone in the chat, I'm sure, knows. I've heard it so many freaking times over the years, but I can't think of it at the moment. But yes, yeah, that is the creation myth where they're stirring up the water and all that.
Yeah, if I remember right, he either cried into or jacked off into the water, and then they stirred it up, and then humans came out of it.
Pretty sure it's the latter.
It's like, sorry, YouTube.
No, I didn't make up the story. Thematically speaking, it's appropriate.
So. Yeah. Yeah. So this is supposed to be heaven in their mind. And in some way, they're hoping to then expand it to the outside. And we haven't seen what the outside current like looks like during that time. So I don't know if it's just, I assume it has to be in some way, I don't think it's like post-apocalyptic or post-disaster, because normal people are sending their kids there. They're just right?
Maybe I was thinking, because the line I think is specifically, I think I had it in the screenshots. I think it's specifically society, those things are all long gone. And so maybe you're right. Maybe she was speaking more from the perspective of like, we've removed ourselves from it. But I kind of thought that
I'm thinking like it's more like a cult thing.
Okay.
Like a highly, like, they've enlisted some of the most, the brightest people to work for them because they've created this facility and it's very technologically advanced. I mean, I think we still are speaking about a future, like a futuristic time because of the robots and everything. Like we don't currently have.
So maybe society is kind of like.
I think it's more like a Kanye school thing.
Oh God.
People were like, yeah, you can take my kids and, you know, I think you're a genius and go ahead and you can teach them what you think they need to know to be as successful as you are. But I think in this case, it's less of like, we'll turn your kids into highly successful individuals and more as, do you subscribe to our philosophy? We're going to change the entire world by raising up the next leaders. You know, that's like a selling point, not necessarily a mission point. And they're going to, spread this philosophy outward when they grow up. I think that's kind of what they're selling on the surface, but then they, you know, also want to put their grown-up brains in them.
Yeah, so good.
Yeah,
they're good.
Yeah. So yeah, we kind of get that going on. I'm actually not going to show the picture of Tokyo giving birth because it's traumatic.
I was like, it's not showing anything, but it's also, I mean, as far as the tone of the episode goes, it's like,
yeah,
it's pretty much that for 22 minutes. I guess there's a cute little bit at the beginning where we find out that maybe Hime's name is not, it's not necessarily like just like a cute little nickname. She really does have big old honking ears.
Yeah, she's got big old donkey ears.
Yeah.
Which just seemed like an additional thing along with her like precognitive sort of abilities. Like, I mean, because donkeys aren't psychic, at least as far as I know. Never really, you know, checked with a donkey. Maybe donkeys know what the fuck's going on, man. I don't know.
That's how they never want to do anything, because they know it's all going to go bad.
Like, this is a waste of time. You're trying to make me work in these conditions, in this economy? Come on.
Now, the one thing I was really curious about, because the show does not make it very clear still.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that Tokyo knows what happened to her?
I feel like they did not explain that she was pregnant, how she got pregnant, or that she was even giving birth at the time of giving birth. So I feel like she was completely in the dark about the entire thing.
Because when she was saying, like, I'm dying, it didn't just seem like, oh, this hurts a lot. It's I don't think she knew what was going on.
Yeah, I don't think she knew what was going on. We also learned, surprise, surprise, that Maru... Okay, so we had kind of been double faked out at this point. They had said, Maru, you got to go find the person who looks just like you. And we assumed for a long time that was Tokyo and that they were the same timeline and that they were twins that got separated or something, right? And then we got wise to the timeline and we're like, oh, well, it's Tokyo's his mother. Mm-hmm. But it turns out that he still does have a twin somewhere.
Yes.
And I was like, yes. What? Where, though? Like, we haven't seen... I don't think we've seen Tokyo's... Or not, I mean, Maru's sibling.
I don't think so either, but who knows?
Yeah, who knows at this point, like... So I thought that was kind of a like another sort of neat twist on mm-hmm. that. I'm also curious what you think about... the robot, Mina. So Mina's like the one we saw in the beginning, right? And it has the weird attachments and is probably involved with either like creating some of the children or giving the children their flout or their powers, that kind of thing. And one of the robots who I assume is linked to Mina was giving the tech people instructions on like how to hook everything up or whatever. But I kind of think the robot is on the kids' side.
The robot, the robot is at the very least on the robot side. There's some sort of,
yeah.
And there's also like this conspiracy that, what's his name? Sawatari, right? The doctor that's helping out with the babies.
Oh, right. Yeah. The one who is like not cool
with the brain transplant.
Right. Because the old woman's plan is to get her brain transplanted into the lady that she just promoted, mm-hmm. And then wait a while and get brain transplanted into Tokyo or not Tokyo's yes. child. Yeah. So
Maru or whoever Maru's sibling is.
Yeah, yeah. So,
but it's him and that woman have some kind of ulterior thing going on too.
They're planning the prison break. It's yeah. pretty obvious that they're planning, they're working together somehow to plan the prison break because they're kind of whispering and stuff about it at various points. And then when they have the pool meeting, that's a ruse. Like, that's why I think the robot is in on it or mm-hmm. some of the robots have been programmed to help them or something because, what was I trying to think?
They give him that little like that lesson about
yeah, how... yeah. It basically like, hey, you need to, you know, we'll tell you when it starts, and then you got to find the way you think is the way out.
You're like, all and specifically the Minabot calls them Hiruko.
Yeah, yes, she does, which I thought was the first time we've heard that, other than when Maru has used it to refer to the man-eaters.
Yes. So and it's the first time that the show has confirmed our understanding that the man-eaters are yeah. these kids.
Yeah. And I'm assuming that Maru calls them that probably because he was told to, and he didn't know why. And then we also see the old woman does talk about soldiers and shows off the gun that,
the beam gun.
The beam gun. That's supposed to be.
It's not the special beam cannon, but it's what do they call it? Now, okay, so here's a question I had because I'm really bad with names, mm-hmm. and obviously the show is intentionally trying to kind of fake us out with like the resemblances that certain characters have, but the lady that raised Maru,
okay,
and gave Kiruko the gun, mm-hmm. and told them to find the person that looks just like Maru. Did we get that lady's name? And is it the same name as one of these people that we've met as kids in this facility?
I feel like
it must be, right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't remember if we've heard her name before because it's been so long, but I assume for sure that, you know, she had the gun and she's probably one of the kids that we've seen. Given how the screen time was used, I wouldn't be surprised if it was the girl who showed up in the swimming suit, who wasn't supposed to be in the swimsuit with the black hair. Because the lady
Anzu?
I don't think her name was Anzu, was it?
Someone's name was Anzu, maybe.
Maybe.
I don't know. But yeah, that's what I was thinking.
They have like a physical resemblance. I don't know for sure that it's them, but they have a physical resemblance. And I don't recall ever seeing her really before her having any lines, so it seemed narratively like it was
the show was like pointing her out.
Like, yeah, like, hey, here's a character you don't really know, but you should maybe remember her. So we're gonna have her do a couple things in this episode so that she sticks in your mind. But
what did you think of Oma, the glasses girl?
I felt real bad for Oma, man. So like, poor kid, born with the worst version of Cyclops powers, you know.
I know.
I expected a beam to shoot out when the sunglasses came off.
Yeah, it's like Cyclops mixed with Magneto, where she just looks at someone and implants these horrifying visions in their head. Not even on purpose. Like, it's not from her. She kind of triggers these hallucinations.
Yeah, exactly.
Such maybe future vision? Was that
right?
Like,
right, that's what I was kind of wondering. I mean, it's supposed to just be their anxieties or fears is kind of what the sense we get, but we know that Mimihime ends up basically plugged into a whole bunch of medical equipment, having to have body parts amputated and all that other kind of stuff in her future. So,
and she specifically drops that line where she says, I don't know why I would be afraid of these things. I've never had a traumatizing experience with needles and blades yet. And it's like, oh no.
But then, you know, Kona adds that he's claustrophobic. But that's a pretty common phobia, right? Like, I don't know if, I mean, and needles, I think, are also a really common phobia. Like, I don't like getting my blood drawn at all. It freaks me out, even as a person who has a lot of tattoos.
I mean, obviously, like, the saw blades would be no good. But I feel like that's one of those things where if you're not exposed to them in a certain way, I wonder how deeply that fear is going to be embedded. Like, if you've never gotten a bunch of shots and stuff before, you don't even think of needles going into your body as a thing that's going to happen very often.
Yeah.
Like, I'm wondering where that fear would manifest, right? Like, usually when people are afraid of needles, it's because, like, they had a really bad, scary experience with, like, a shot or something as a kid.
Yeah. Like, I've had that blood draws where they stabbed me a whole bunch of times. So now I always anticipate, like, they're not going to be able to find a vein. And so they are going to stick me a whole bunch and it hurts. And that happened, you know, when I was in labor specifically. So, like, that was also bad. Because I would think that they have a medical ward and everything, but it seems like it's either done by a human or by robots. And I don't know that robots would, you know, in this futuristic setting would make those kinds of errors where you would, you know, build up an anxiety about that. But I feel can relate to her feeling, but I agree with you. It does seem like it might be based more on her having seen things that she can't describe, because when she's talking with Kona, she sees the man eater he's going to become and all the blood all over the floor. And it's just like, that scene was done really well, because it just kind of invokes this
creepy whole episode. I thought was so good, like, just directorially.
Yeah, the creeping dread, how it follows the blood pooling up and her trying to ignore it. I also liked, you know, that she was able to, like, overcome her fear and reassure.
Reminded me of The Sixth Sense when Angel Osman is trying to ignore the ghosts.
Right. Yeah. Very similar to that. Quanti 5 said he got checkboard allergy. I've heard of the checkboard allergy tests. I don't have, I don't even have seasonal allergies, so I can't relate to that personally, but I've known people have had to get that done with their kids, especially because I think some of it includes nuts.
Well, that's basically how they, like, I think because nut allergies have become so prevalent and dangerous, because I guess I don't know if I got it as a kid, but I've never been told that I'm allergic to anything. So if I did, it probably came back clear. But knowing how, like, how awful, like, nut and egg allergies have become for some kids, or, like, I've had students where, like, it'll tell me in their notes, like, if this kid touches an egg, they might die. So, like, no eggs in your class, you know, no eggs.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah. Also, that stuff can also come on late. My mom developed an almond allergy at, like, 18. Like, she didn't have any issues with almonds, and it's just specifically almonds, during our youth or anything. And then she was walking through a almond orchard, like, I think it was a family member's almond orchard, and just sort of, like, eating some almonds and had an allergic reaction to it. And it's gotten worse as she's gotten older, to the point where, like, my mom would need like an EpiPen if she just ate an almond.
My brother-in-law is he's living out one of my worst nightmares because in his mid-20s he developed an allergy to avocado.
That's horrible.
I know. I truly, like, I felt bad when he told me because I was like, oh, like a part of me was like, oh, thank God it's not me. Like, I don't know what I would do.
You can still eat guacamole. Yeah. Elaphars, anaphylaxis. Yeah, like her throat will close up, sort of deal. Trouble breathing, hives, the whole nine yards for almonds. And didn't develop until she was like 19. So, yeah, just sucks. Yeah, looking through the, we also... No, where we leave off with Maru and I keep wanting to say Hiruko because that's the name of the kids in this. Kiruko. They're at the facility or right outside of the facility, I should say. And Robin is there. And we've been kind of like, I've been in the dark a little bit about Robin's involvement. I mean, as far as like any of the stuff that happened with Tokyo or what he's doing now. Like, I know that
I mean, they haven't really, the only thing we've gotten of Robin's entire existence outside of the one episode where we're introduced to him and then he disappears is when those guys recognized him as a doctor, I guess.
Yeah.
As the traveling doctor. And so that's all we know.
But he's not the one who did the brain transplant on the siblings on.
Well, he's not the one that Kiruko blames for doing the brain transplant.
Right.
You know, like, he's not the doctor that was there when they were getting wheeled into surgery, but I wouldn't be surprised if like the big twist is, oh, it was actually Robin that did it. And the other surgeon was secretly do. I don't know. Yeah, I don't trust anything this show tells me at this point.
Yeah.
I assume it's all a lie or it's all a fake out.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm looking at this picture of all the kids together to see if I can spot kind of like the who's who in here. Did not know that ponytail guy was so tall.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I guess most of these kids are like super short, though.
Yeah, because they're like nine. Yeah.
He's about as tall as a... Now, did you notice, well, I mean, I think it was pretty intentional, but are they drawing Tokyo? Are they emphasizing Tokyo's feminine features more now that, is it just the fact that like her hair has gotten a little bit longer while she's been in the maternity ward or?
I think it's just the hair, because she always had the eyelashes, you know, that was sort of like, is this a boy with really long eyelashes or is this a girl with really short hair kind of deal? And it,
well, even with like her body, just like the way that she was like walking and I don't know, maybe it's just she's wearing an outfit that's not that really intentionally androgynous.
Yeah.
Sailor.
Yeah, because their school uniforms are really boxy. I mean, they're wearing like board shorts and just like square tops, you know.
Which is on purpose. Like, I mean, clearly, right? Like they're trying to prevent any curves from popping up or anything.
That's
like
true.
That.
Yeah. That's probably intentional by design on their part. I feel bad that I don't think Kona knows he has a baby.
No, he does though, because he had that like empathetic kind of shockwave.
Oh well, he was they call it like a sympathy pregnancy. Like sometimes the spouse. Well,
but he got like a message, right? It said like the baby will be born or something.
Did he get that message? I know that like there was some psychic stuff going on as far as him feeling like unwell. Okay. And knowing that it was linked to Tokyo, so he knew like it was related to her state. But I at least didn't pick up on him. Actually,
I mean, he knows what
thing.
Sex is, right? Like he knows like.
He knows what he did. As far as
I think
like he was there,
I think he knows why Tokyo disappeared for 9 months after.
You think so?
I think so. Yeah, I think he definitely knows. Yeah.
Okay.
Plus he's like psychic, you know.
That's true. I mean, I don't know. I kind of want to rewatch this episode too, because there was just a lot of things
Very dense.
Very dense. A lot going on. And I'm curious, I mean, we know some of these kids' fates now at this point. And what's going to happen. Like, I feel like there's going to be a blackout or something. Like, the doors are just going to open and they're all going to make a run for it, thinking they're playing a game. And then what?
Is it the whole thing going to be that, like, the doctor and is it like an apocalyptic cult? Like, they unleashed the man-eaters on the world specifically to end it so that they could, like...
Oh, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't... They think, obviously, that, like, something is about to go down if they're going to create soldiers and that they've created weapons for these soldiers, right? And again, that's not unusual for people who believe there's going to be some kind of apocalyptic event, you know, like... A lot of cults end up armed to the teeth and have a lot of firearms and stuff. Like,
it's weird how that happens.
Weird how that happens. Yeah, like what happened in Waco. And yeah. I mean, Charles Manson's cult too. So,
oh, Heaven's Gate was stocking up on firearms before they drank their
drink. Yeah, their Heaven's Gate, Jonestown too. It's not unusual for those sort of situations to have weapons. But I'm not clear on, yeah, what is going to actually become the post-apocalyptic event. They're still relatively small population-wise, even given how extensive the facility is. Like, this is a pretty high-tech facility for what appears to be. These are all the kids, right? Like, they all met down there.
I think that's all of them. And I mean...
And there's some adults, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
But this is supposed to have been a world-ending event, right? Not just Japan.
Right.
Like all of humanity has gotten, in theory, completely jacked up because of this. So right. I'm wondering if there's more to it than just the kids become the man-eaters. Like, I feel like there has to be some greater cataclysm, you know, some like massive earthquakes or, you know, environmental somethings. That...
Right. Yeah, because in this episode, the doctor... He's not even sure why they still don't know why the kids are even turning into monsters. Like, they don't know why that's happening and how to prevent it. Like, they think it might be contagious, or they're not sure if it's contagious anyway. But it doesn't seem like that's their goal result, is to unleash man-eaters on the world, because they don't seem to be in control of that process. So I'm thinking that it's more like a side effect of however they're creating some of these children. So there are still a lot of unknowns, and this definitely felt like no kids have turned into a monster yet in that timeline. They have contacted, kind of, yeah. I mean, we watched that one kid like completely deteriorate and then they cremated him. So they don't know why that's happened yet. And yeah, it doesn't seem like we've had like a monster like unleashed in here, unless you count. We also don't know why a sewer looked like that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
We still don't. I mean, if we've got a girl who has donkey ears, like maybe it was just like that. It was, you know, she just had a sewer just had like a ton of psychic abilities and, you know.
There's like the frog girl. So they know that the kids are like, I guess it's unclear how much of those like animal or there's like. What's the word? Phenotypic, right? The actual physical. I guess it's unclear whether those are the same goal or whether they just want like the psychic powers.
Right. Yeah. 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 We're not entirely sure like what exactly they're trying to cultivate. If it's just some elaborate abilities, like the ability to climb walls or the precognition levitation, telekinesis sorts of stuff. Or if it's it's something else. I mean, we have also seen like the weird looking babies. Still kind of assuming those weird looking babies somehow develop into humans, even though they don't have, even though they have like squid feet. Don't really know. Yeah,
I forgot about those.
You forgot about the squid feet babies. Yeah. So yeah, there's still a lot.
The bullseye faces.
Yeah, there's still a lot of unknowns. I don't think we're going to get a nice, clean explanation for all of this, to be honest, because the manga is still ongoing.
The manga is still so forthright with its answers.
Yeah, the manga is still ongoing, and this was episode 11. Like we've got one or two.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got like one or two episodes left. I'm kind of assuming it wraps with like, I'm assuming maybe two. We get Kiriko and Maru reach the facility and encounter Robin, and that stuff happens, and the kids make a break for it. Mm-hmm. And that's about it. So
yeah, I mean, unless they go for one of those like double length finale episodes.
Yeah, like Demon Slayer's getting one of those.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. 70 minutes. Well, 50 if you count the commercials. So.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Hooray.
So, people have stuck it out. I still think this has been like, as far as production-wise, this has been an amazing show. The mysteries have been really good. I mean, I hope that it gets a second season. My only fear is usually with second seasons is if they're going to get the entire team back, because a lot of what made this what it was the team behind it, the director, the character designer, the key animators that they brought on, stuff like that. And I've seen what happens, you know, when you try to do another season of like, One Punch Man without that.
Yeah.
And yep. It's not the same. So.
Well, I'm wondering too, I mean, you know, we've talked on the show before about how important international broadcasts are becoming to kind of quantifying the success of a show.
Yeah.
Right. Where like a show like Chainsaw Man can earn back its entire budget, even when its physical media releases in Japan are relatively low.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if this is the kind of show where whether or not it did the numbers it needed to here or you know, overseas is going to be a determining factor, because I feel like being in Hulu, the Hulu gulag is worse than Netflix jail at this point. Like I don't see any discourse about this show happening on a week-to-week basis.
No.
I don't know how many people are watching it.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know either. And I mean, there was also that stuff in the beginning where there was like major issues with the subtitle timing. And people will just like, I got to go onto another service I'm not using to watch anime, to watch this specifically. And then when the subtitles don't work correctly, you know, there's 40 shows a season, I'm out, you know? So, yeah. Unfortunately, this is one of those ones where, like, I don't even know what the home video situation is for it, as far as like an English release.
I am not assuming we're going to see any kind of Blu-ray.
Like, I would buy it on Blu-ray just as a matter to like support the show, in the hopes that it continues. But I don't know who we would get that from.
Yeah, I mean, Disney has not been super enthusiastic about putting most anything that isn't one of their live action remakes out on Blu-ray these days, or a Marvel movie.
Yeah, I was gonna say Summertime Rendering took forever to come out, and that's not out on Blu-ray, is it?
Let's see. I don't know. I wonder.
Minmob said that the Japanese Blu-rays for the series though come out in August and September. If you wanted to import them.
Oh yes. Yes. It does not look like it now. Region release for the West for Blu-ray.
Yeah. Well, James, you know what we got to do? We got to put our anime powers together.
Yes.
And make
that by happen. Our powers combined.
I've already mentioned bothering Yoko Taro and Mr. Maruyama at Anime Expo. Production IG will be there as well. So if I get the opportunity, I'll be sure to let them know that we personally here at the ANN After Show would like a home video release of Heavenly Delusion. And please.
If you get the chance to bother Yoko Taro, if you could also just put in a good word and let him know that there is at least one humble critic that will contribute a solid $25 to $50 towards the production of a Drakengard 3 remaster.
You'll put that word in there. When Drakengard 3 come out, James?
It was after the original Nier. I want to say like 2015-ish.
Okay.
Thereabouts.
Okay.
So kind of a busted game, technically speaking.
Yeah.
So could really benefit from a remaster.
Oh, okay. Okay. I'll make sure to let him. Do we even really know it's a man under there?
Yes. Well, I get I've seen him speak at a, I want to say it was a GDC panel where he didn't have his mask on. So
seriously?
I think so.
You've seen Yoko Taro without his mask? This is like news, isn't it?
Yeah. No, I think it's one of those things where, like, if you go looking for it, you can find it. I think it's I think specifically it's publicity that he doesn't love. But if it's like, you know, a conference for developers where he just gets to talk about like what he actually does at his job, he's probably fine with it. So,
okay.
Yeah, he just looks like a guy.
Just looks like a dude. Okay.
Yeah. Well, like a middle-aged Japanese man.
Okay. Well, next week, guys, we won't be doing this. We're gonna be doing the trailer watch party. So. Tune in for that. It'll be Wednesday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern. Me, James, Jackie Jing, and Jeff Thew will be there going through all the trailers for the summer season. It's bound to be a really good time, so come hang out with us. And then the following week, let me look. I always have to look at the calendar at the end of the show. Okay, so we're doing that on Wednesday. The following week is the 27th. I will not be here. I'm flying out to Los Angeles on the 27th because I'm spending a couple days at Universal Studios with my family before I do AX. So I'm going to go see that Nintendo World in person. Find out if that's any good or get trampled by Goombas. I don't know.
Hopefully we'll see. the first one.
Hopefully the first one. So we'll see you guys next week on Wednesday. And until then, be cool. Bye.